but I do need to ask, like, how did you discover you were literally raised in a cult? Like, I'm sorry, that is crazy.
If we're really honest about it, control doesn't exist. It's a facade that we create. It's the fake it till you can make it. And we forget that we're faking it.
Exactly.
And so we're not really relinquishing anything.
Hey, and welcome to the Parenting on Purpose podcast. Your podcast to mirror your self-development journey with your parenting journey, because it is amazing what can be accomplished with a little bit of purpose. I hope you enjoy. Welcome to Parenting on Purpose.
Hi, parents. Welcome back to Parenting on Purpose. I got some soul food for you today, friends. I am so excited. This is Miss Amy Lynn Carroll, aka Babs. Welcome to the show. How are you today?
I'm wonderful, Caitlin. Thank you for the invite. I'm excited to be here with you and your listeners today.
It is not every day we get a TEDx speaker, a Amazon best-selling author, a amazing trauma and life transformation coach, and someone who has an incredible program that I really want to learn more about, which is the 12th dimensional program. Because as you know, here, I'm all about making parallels. And so we're going to have a lot of fun today. But before we start, I want to ask, because I always do, tell me, my darling, what is one thing that you do in your life every day to show up on purpose?
Ooh, one thing I do every day in my life to show up on purpose is when I talk with a person, whether I know them or I don't, I call them by the name. It reminds them of who they are, and it reminds me of who they are. And that ensures that I show up better for them and for me. And so, Caitlin, love, thank you for allowing me to be with you today.
Oh my gosh, that was great.
Tough day. Not I love you, but actually calling them love.
Yeah.
Children resonate with that in my experience so much more than adults do. Adults are taken aback. Children just latch on to it. And by children, I'm not necessarily talking about chronological age, but spiritual age even. It's like that space of being seen. And, you know, I first started it to catch myself about how I was showing up for people. And then I just recognized what a gift it was to so many others. So I definitely get some resistance here and there.
I love that. But
moreover, the result is... It stops people. It stops them in their tracks. And kids, it's like their faces just light up. And, oh, I love that you called me love. Thank you. And
it's amazing.
So that's what we are. So why not call us that?
Amen to that. And I that's where I was going with it. I wanted to say thank you, because you just healed something in me that I didn't even realize was a trauma that I carried, which was referring to people as you truly see them and reminding yourself how to show up. So thank you for that. That was awesome. So
hey,
good.
You prompted it with the question.
And this is why I ask. It's season two. And I thought about, like, maybe we change that up. And I'm like, I can't, because I learned so much from how people show up. And that's why we're doing this. So you brought it, you brought the goods. That was perfect.
So does that mean since we've learned something, we can just log off now?
We're good. Exactly. If I wasn't greedy, probably, but there's so much that I want to explore about your world. I'm so, your journey, the power of relinquishing control. I know that's what you talked about on TEDx, and it's something that I struggle with. I just went through a pretty traumatic birth experience. My son was born at 33 weeks, and he's beautiful. He's fine. I went through an emergency C-section. It was scary. I got out of surgery, and my entire family flew, and they were all there because, like, it got scary at the end. And that whole journey for me, I knew early on that it was going to be a little scary and tumultuous. But it was about relinquishing control. And so when I saw on your profile that you had a similar journey and story, I think that when you go through that experience and then you're also a parent, there's a lot to unpack there, but that parenting is this beautiful opportunity for you to relinquish control. At least that's what it taught me. Going through that on my own helped me to do it in my life. And I feel way more at ease with myself as I did before. So that was one of the many things I loved about you. And I don't know if there's anything you want to share there, but I would love to hear a little bit about what you've learned through that journey of relinquishing control and how it actually propels you farther in life to let go and to receive versus trying to, like, retrofit everything into the said box.
Oh, absolutely. And Caitlin, one of the most important things that I learned about this idea of control versus command is that control is actually a very limiting belief. And not only limits us, but it limits the individuals or the circumstances that we're attempting to control, because control is, it's a misnomer. It's a misunderstanding of where our power truly lies. For me, that lesson really came in October of 2022. I had a stroke, and that stroke left me a quadriplegic. Prior to that, even though I'd had some medical challenges and some limited mobility, I was what I kind of classified myself as a type triple A personality. And as we all know, when the A is involved in the personality, control is like the most important component to what we think success is going to be derived from.
Yeah.
Well, when you find yourself in a position where you feel an absence of control in every aspect of your life, you either find a place to really go into the darkness, or you find a new way of being. And for me, I dabbled in the darkness, don't we all?
Of course.
You know, society would tell us that that's okay to do. And it is okay to do, because if I hadn't dabbled in the darkness,
of course,
I would have never found the light of command. And command isn't about relinquishing everything to those around you. Command is about surrounding yourself with individuals who can bring the needs that are showing up in your experience. The whole phrase, if it's going to be, it's up to me, is rubbish.
Yeah.
Rubbish.
Wow.
It's absolutely limiting. And so I got the opportunity to learn that by asking for help, by seeking guidance, by asking someone to share what their experience was, I got to learn a whole lot more about myself and how I wanted to show up in the world. Because we all know a controlling person, and very few of us appreciate the controllingness in that person.
Right.
So by working to relinquish that, and look, I'd love to say that I'm a recovering control freak, but I'm not. I'm recovering.
Yeah.
And it's a day-to-day thing. It's a mindset. But when we think about control for me in the scope of parenting, I'm not going to speak about it as a parent because I'm not one, but I'm going to speak about it as a child.
Love
where
that.
Control, my father was a Marine Corps drill instructor. My father was a deacon in a church that I now know was a cult. So control was his superpower.
Wow.
I was one of 15 kids. You had 120 seconds to take a shower.
Oh my gosh.
And at 121 seconds, the shower turned off. So when I'm talking about living in a world of control, I mean it. It wasn't just kind of something that my life was, you know, peripheral to. It was every day. And so as the child of someone who is controlling, it was very limiting. It caused doubt in my own thought, in my own heart. My value, my worth was predicated on doing what a controlling parent dictated, as opposed to exploring and finding out who I am and what I have to offer and what excites me.
Love
and
that.
So from that parenting space, it's as much about how we interact with other adults. That's important. But when we think about wanting to give back to our children in a way where they can flourish and thrive, that controlling aspect actually limits a child, and it stunts their growth physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually.
Yeah.
Kicking illy. And we're limiting it when we try to control, especially the mind, the heart, the soul of a developing child.
That was a lot. We are coming back to the, I realized I was raised in a cult. There, that was not lost on me. So we're going back to that because, like, whoa. But first, the way I see it in my mind's eye as you're explaining that is like on a I guess a spectrum, you have control, and then on the other end you have command. And control is very passive, and it's very reactive. Not passive, very reactive. As parents, we are living in this fight or flight. We have these beliefs in ourself of what life should be like, and if we don't feel like we're doing right, we have this oppressive, like, dictatorship kind of going on in our household. And yes, I felt it within me as you were talking about it, but that we can't allow our children to really flourish and grow and have fun. And it sounded like children playing in the fields as you were saying it. I could just get this visual of just this beautiful life that these kids are naturally inclined to have that we oppress. And this is why I do this whole podcast, but as parents, this is our second chance not to overteach, not to control, but to let them rub off on us, to be the kid that takes off her shoes and puts them on the grass, or to be through the eyes of a child again. So that was beautiful. And I also want to ask more about the command, because when I hear command, is that supposed to be synonymous with like surrender? But you also mentioned you utilizing other people, which is beautiful because we then grow in coherence with the whole. But like, help me with the command part. I don't understand it.
I think the easiest way to do that is to tell you when my God whisper said, this is the healing. Command is the healing you're looking for from fear.
Wow.
Because control comes from a place of fear. Yeah. I don't want my children to be hurt. I don't want them to make bad decisions. I don't want other people to look at them poorly.
Yes.
So control comes from a place of fear. So a couple of years back, my husband and I are watching, I think it was Apollo 13. It was the 50-year anniversary of landing on the moon. And they actually used footage and audio. The entire audio of that movie was captured from during the time of Apollo 13. And so we're sitting there, and on the screen, what you see is you see the command center. And in that command center, there are hundreds of computer monitors. And for each computer monitor, there's one person. And all of a sudden it dawned on me that astronauts are not in flight for an 8-hour shift. So I did some research. And the redundancy for each position held within the NASA command center when a shuttle is on flight, when astronauts are on flight, is at least 4 to 6 people redundant, 4 to 6 people deep. You're not the only person that can do that job at any level, whether you're the astronaut, whether you're the guy removing garbage and trash, you know, so from the top of the food chain to what might be perceived as the bottom, the redundancy and the importance of each person knowing their task. And when challenges arose, it wasn't one person solving it. It may be one person communicating to the astronauts, but there was a team of people bringing their expertise to the question that had arisen. And it was a question. We think of them as challenges. We think of them as trauma. We think of it as, you know, life is happening to me. Mm-hmm. But the opportunity that those scenarios open up for each and every one of us, that invitation is to call on the people in our sphere of influence or to seek out individuals who can help us answer a question. And that's the command. Because without the command center, not only could those astronauts have not come home safely, they would have never left the Earth.
Right.
And that, to me, is the important thing. Command allows for frontiers that control sees as boundaries. Frontiers versus boundaries. Command versus control. And my life has changed exponentially just with that shift in my own thought, because not only do I view the people around me differently, but I am grateful for them in a much different way. And I'm seeking out their strengths
Yes.
As opposed to focusing on the things that might annoy me about them mm-hmm. or that wow. are toxic even in 2024, terminology.
Verbiage.
Right. Yeah. So it becomes this space where you begin to interact differently because you're seeing those people around you very differently. And the people around you, when you begin to see them differently, your friendships, your relationships change because you're seeing a part of them. You're yeah. seeing their strengths. Yeah. You're seeing their know-how. You're seeing the things that they bring to the table where most people in their lives are seeing the deficiencies.
Limits.
Yeah.
Wow. That was the divinely orchestrated component of we are not meant to exist alone. We are meant to be in a community. Our children are raised in a community, whether it's church, whether hopefully maybe not a cult, who knows? Can cults be good? I don't know. I'm a Harry Potter fan. That might be a cult. I'm not sure. Whatever that is, sports, the people on your cul-de-sac, friends from work, we are all meant to share our experiences together, have our tribe, because we can leverage that. I also felt that when you are on the end of the spectrum, that's control, there is a false sense of security. There is a false self-worth. I'll venture to say there's a false self-worth. I am better. I am the best. Other people, like you mentioned, don't have the value. I must control and overproduce, overbear, because what I can do is better than what others can. But that's not how nature works. If you are the guy or the girl, then guess what? You have now lowered that ceiling so low that nobody under your control can get past it, including yourself.
Exactly.
Wow. Just like, wow, you just blew my mind. And then when you can get to the component of, I look at it as relinquishing control, or as you're saying, command, and command almost sounds empowering. Like I'm commanding. Mm-hmm. And it felt more like self-command. Like I can command myself to step back enough to let other things come in. And now I'm working at a higher level. I'm command central. I can see where the strings need to be pulled for the betterment of all. And hey, maybe my role looks different, but I'm now no longer in this tiny ceiling. Now there's this whole expanse that I get to play within. Oh, by the way, with all these other very capable souls that we can all learn and thrive from. So like, wow, Babs, that was awesome.
But keep in mind, you used a word, relinquishing control, or a phrase, relinquishing control. If we're really honest about it, control doesn't exist. It's a facade that we create. It's the fake it till you can make it. And we forget that we're faking it.
Exactly.
And so we're not really relinquishing anything. Because I've had so many people say to me, how did you relinquish that idea of control? Well, I realized that the idea of control is a fallacy to begin with.
Yeah.
It just is so true of what is. And by seeing and experiencing the truth of what is, the idea of control fades away to its native nothingness. We don't have to do anything to relinquish control, because we're not holding on to anything. If we think we're in control, our hands may be clenched, but they're empty.
Yes, exactly.
How do we know that? Because we're constantly stressed. We're constantly overwhelmed. We're constantly exhausted. That's what, like when we think about control freaks in our life, and I can say this because I was one.
Sure. Same.
That's the overwhelming character personalities that come about. Overpromising, under-delivering, or being overly stressed, overwhelmed, exhausted. And we're all of these things due to a misunderstanding of truth, a misunderstanding of what's really happening.
Wow. Yes. And you're also in the situation where you're a parent at the same time, right? Or if you're in that situation, then it can be overwhelming. And I can 1,000%, we gotta give ourselves some grace, guys. Yes. Like this, there's a lot going on. But nothing is given to us that we can't see ourselves through or grow from within. It's not happening to us. It happens for us. So if we are in these situations, what can change? What what can we control? What can be different? And what we can control there is our attitude. So we can allow things to not be necessarily as we think, so that we can show ourselves it's actually safe to dip our toe into the water. It's safe to expand our horizons. We will not instantly be wiped from the face of the earth if we let our child do this when we originally thought they shouldn't, or whatever that thing is. I've had to do this myself where I'm like, does this have to be this way? Or am I just being a control freak? Why do I feel the need to tell my child how to put on his shoes? Like, why can't he figure that out for himself? Do I, out of all the things I need to do in my life, are putting on a 4-year-old shoes in that repertoire? No, they don't need to be. So that was amazing. I love that answer. That was great. Can we go ahead, please.
Let's take it one step further though, because while your audience is parents, well, that means if they're parents, they all have children. And as a child of a control freak, at 18 years old, I found myself curled in a ball in tears on the floor of my banker's office because I'd never had to make, my parents didn't give me the opportunity to make mistakes. And the fear of making the wrong decision, I didn't have critical thinking skills.
Right.
And when we are overly controlling in the way things develop and unfold, when children are involved, especially, they don't grow the muscle of learning critical thinking skills.
Yes.
And so what happens when they go to college, what happens when they leave the house, is the smallest of things becomes overwhelming. Because my mom's not there to show me how to do it. My dad's not there to tell me how it's to be done. Control says it's black and white. There's a right way and a wrong way. Command says it opens that invitation for there to be innumerable ways for something to get done,
yes,
as long as it gets done. And the gift that we give our children in that space is they become confident in, no matter what question is posed to them, at whatever point in their life, they're going to have the ability to think through it and make a choice. And recognize that even if they make the wrong choice, they'll have an opportunity to make a choice again.
Correct.
So they don't become paralyzed and they don't necessarily need to be medicated the way so many people do because of anxiety and stress. That anxiety and stress comes from a lack of self-worth, of self-value, of self-trust.
Yep. Trust.
And fear. So it's not just about us not being controlling so that we aren't feeling right, overwhelmed and a less amount of stress, but it's really a gift that we give to our children or those people around, our spouses. You know, I can only imagine that another big challenge in parenting is that spousal relationship.
For sure.
Look, I've been married and they don't always do things the way I want them to.
Right.
Add the component of a child and the confusion of whom do I listen to, especially if the spouses aren't on the same
page. Yeah. Yeah.
So it's an overabundance of grace, as you said a moment ago, that we allow for ourselves and those around us to explore and discover, as opposed to instilling a fear that ultimately oftentimes manifests into physical ailments
100%.
As we grow older.
And that's what you work with your clients, right? Is understanding the traumas that come from these things. It's not necessarily the event that causes the trauma. It's the way you internalize it in the physical, emotional, spiritual body. And that can show up as any type of several things. I see it as a very expansive environment versus a very stifling one. And I'm not here, nor is Babs, to say what's right or what's wrong. I think what's beautiful in this exchange is to just point that out and say, you get to be the creator, right? You're the captain of the ship. And if you're my family, we're all the captains because there's too many type A's in my family. So we all just have one big steering wheel and we're all just fighting. But what environment, culture, impact, legacy do you want to leave? What does it mean to be a insert your last name? What does it mean to be a Carol? What does it mean to be a Sami Fua? that's what I want my children going out into the world with. You mentioned kids, and I know this because I have an almost college age daughter that we've adopted, and I have college age nieces and nephews that, not necessarily them, right? But I understand this age where you go out and you don't feel like you have the skill sets to navigate the world because your parents felt like they needed to control things. So the safe space is within your walls for them to play and flourish and thrive. And also,
or the opposite.
Okay.
Is one, if they're given the opportunity to explore as a child,
right,
in a safe place where it's okay to make mistakes, then if you're not stifled and controlled as a child, you know, yeah, one is the fear of never being able to make the right decision. The opposite spectrum to that is where so many of us have gone, or so many children go, is look, when the control element is gone, because I've moved out of my parents' home, guess what? There are no boundaries. There are no limits, because I'm not going to be who I was growing up. Exactly. And I'm going to try things that I might not try otherwise if I had been provided a safe place to explore and make mistakes in those first 18 years of my life. So when we think about drugs, when we think about reckless driving, you know, and by reckless, I mean, you know, not paying attention, driving too fast, you know, those types of things, making poor decisions in love relationships for young children, you know, in college. It's when it's disallowed because of a controlling environment, we can do, I mean, there's a whole spectrum of what that results in. Part of that is what I experienced. I had no idea who I was, what made me happy. I had no idea how to make decisions because I did what I did because I was told to do it, and not doing it, the consequences were dire. Well, I had a brother when he moved out of the house and graduated from high school, he went the opposite end and he explored with so many things that are the root of the fear that parents have that make them controlling.
Exactly.
But when you're not there to guardrails, bumpers, you know, right, in a bowling alley, for a safe place to explore, discover,
yes,
the mistakes, when the threshold, when the gates are opened, it can be really devastating for a young person in that environment. So it's not just about the stifling.
Yep.
It's also about that opportunity of teaching them safe ways to explore new things.
Of course, skill sets.
And how to make decisions, and recognizing that, oops, hey, I went to that party and I probably drank a little bit too much. I'm going to go to the party the next time, but I'm going to watch how much I drink. And that comes from a parenting environment where it's okay to make mistakes, and recognizing that just because we've made a decision doesn't mean we can't make a fresh one the next time.
Exactly. And that we're so hard on ourselves, right? Like maybe you were meant to make that wrong decision, because you can learn from it, and that's okay. It is exhausting to constantly mentally relive everything in our brains and oppress ourselves for it. Like, just let it go and use that fresh energy for something else. So I'm really happy that you tied in. I wanted to ask you about the upbringing, and I'm glad you brought in some of the lessons of what I've learned coming through that cult environment, but I do need to ask, like, how did you discover you were literally raised in a cult? Like, I'm sorry, that is crazy.
and how I discovered it is also crazy, because,
oh gosh,
you know, it was a number of years ago now as an adult, you know, I'm flipping channels and Dr. Phil comes on and I recognize one of his guests on Dr. Phil. And I was like, well, I know her. There's no way she's a meth head or,
gosh.
And I kind of say that jokingly, because, sure, you know, there's a certain, it's not Jerry Springer, but it's still Dr. Phil.
You know?
So what are you coming to Dr. Phil for? And so, of course, I know this gal and she's my age, and I stop and I start listening, and she's talking about the church I grew up in.
Wow.
She's talking about people I know.
Wow.
And all of a sudden, you know, Dr. Phil has done this research And now he's got guest number two that's coming out that was a part of this church organization in a different city, a different town, a different state. And it was like, I mean, that was an OMG moment.
I mean,
and I'm cleaning that phrase up because this is a parenting audience, but you get it. It was like, it was almost a WTF.
Yeah, for sure.
Because it's like, it answered that moment of clarity because we all understand at least the nuances that a cult is controlling. A cult is usually the dichotomy of it is the opposite of social norms or the exaggeration of a social norm.
Right.
Or an elimination completely of the progress in social norms. And so when I learned that, it allowed me to understand myself.
I bet.
And my parents.
Wow. Yes.
Keeping in mind.
A lot of healing.
When my parents passed away in my early 20s, I did not attend either one of their funerals.
I can imagine.
They're gone. I mean, the proverbial dancing on a grave was done.
Yeah.
It wasn't proverbial.
Yeah.
I could not have been happier that this person, at that point in my life, I thought this person no longer has control over me. And
wow.
I didn't know the difference between control and command at 22 years old.
Yeah.
But that physical presence. Now, I quickly learned that the mindset, I mean, growing up, we weren't allowed to enter our parents' bedroom. I'd never seen the inner confines of my parents' bedroom. Within 6 months of each other, both of my parents passed away.
Wow.
My older brother and I, who are the two oldest of 15, so I'm executor of the estate. We literally stood at the bedroom door and
wow.
You open it. Nope, you open it. Nope, wow. You open it. Like as if my father or my mother was standing there and was going to see us go into a very prohibited state.
Interesting.
But we had to go in there because that's where all the paperwork was. That's
right.
Where the things were that we needed to be able to do what we needed to do.
Wow.
So it's that idea of recognizing that I was absolutely, without exception, raised in a cult allowed me to shift my thought in the healing that I thought I needed.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because sometimes we don't get the healing we think we need. Because we don't understand the healing that it's really going to take. And that is our birthright. It's waiting for us. But when we're asking the wrong questions repeatedly, we're not ever going to find the answers because we're asking the wrong questions. So it's foundational.
Right.
It's foundational.
And kudos to you as just a soul walker to go through what you've gone through. And I want to wrap up. By looking at the 12-dimensional kind of like life blueprint that you have created. But you've really, one thing I focus on in this podcast is like looking at, we have the most incredible guests and looking at, I call it the spiral staircase, but like the path they've walked to find the vortice or the vertical component that strings all that together and using that to make the world a better place. But I do want to just poke with the whole concept of fear. Like that to me is like a macrocosm of what can be accomplished. That's not the right word. What can be stifled with this culture of fear, and it can rip away the, I think you said the progress that can happen in, you know, community or social norms that's supposed to take place. And so I look at that because we can all look at our parents and hopefully very few of us can relate to what Babs went through, but I'll give you a perfect example. Like I hope this wasn't your church, but I read an article recently about in the South, and I say that they're north of me, but of churches that like would get in groups and like guzzle down gasoline or carcinogenic like fuel to show their congregation. There's no judgment here. I just, it's amazing that they can take in this perceivably poisonous substance and through their love of the divine be okay. The part of that I'd like to unravel here is like, WTF are they convincing people that that is okay to do? It's like that to me, that's like a prime example of,
or that that's some badge of honor that shows that you have accomplished some level of divinity or
like
other. Yeah,
but like again, like we have warped and we have like in the worst way alchemy, like made something out of what should be the social ability to say, that's not a good idea. We should not do that. Like everything on TikTok is telling me no to that one. Like that's crazy. But when you think of it from a parenting standpoint, what are we doing in our lives that are causing fear in our children? Because every time there is a fear, there could be something beautiful that replaces that. It has to start within us, right? So, wow. Okay. If you have not watched the TED Talks, right, I will link that under the description because I think there's so much to go through, but your journey in general and the way that you've transformed as a person through it, we can't talk about it today based on time, but I don't want our audience to be robbed of that. So I will absolutely link that below because I think it is an amazing growth experience. I learned and grew just from watching that. But I do want to leave a few moments for you to talk about 12 dimensions and how that looks, where people can find you. Can please wrap us up with that? Because I would love for people to understand what you do now and how you've used all this that you've gone through to then sow into other people and help them see the world as love.
Well, thank you for the invitation and thank you for today's conversation. I love the ability to dig deeper on an idea and see how many tentacles come out from that. And that it's the same idea as control. There's not one way to do things. There is innumerable opportunities for us if we don't attach to fear.
Love it.
Fear of doing wrong, fear of being seen as different, fear of not living up to one expectation or another. And so that really feeds into who I am and what I do now. And in layman's terms, I get to be the person for others that I wish had been present for me in my darkest moments.
Wow.
Some people call me a coach. I call myself a travel partner.
I love that.
Because a travel partner knows whether you're navigating the car, maybe you're sitting in the passenger seat and helping the person who's driving. You might be in the back seat taking a nap while they're exploring and building their muscles. Who knows? You may leave me at the rest stop because I wasn't verbal enough, but you're recognizing that it's okay to come back and pick me up because I didn't let you know I was getting out of the car and you didn't check. So being a travel partner for me is really being that support person. I get to remind you of who you've been all along, who you were created as, but because of life circumstances, you've forgotten along the way. And through that process, what I've done is in my own healing journey, I've created what I call the Life Charter Program. And the Life Charter Program covers 12 dimensions of our being: my character, my emotional life, my intellectual life, parenting, financial, my life vision. There's 12 dimensions, 12 categories there. And we look at your belief patterns. Do you really believe that, or are you operating from a place of borrowed belief?
Wow.
We talk about your vision. What is your vision for this dimension of your life?
Wow.
And what's the purpose of that vision? Because those three things, your belief, which is your premise, your vision, your purpose, and then our fourth step is for each of the 12 categories, we create a strategy.
Yeah.
At the end of that 12 weeks, you have a life charter that you have put together that is yours. Because I got really tired of reading self-help books that told me about how the person healed. But I could never answer the question, well, Kaylin, that's really great, but how do I?
Yeah.
And so Everything I do with keeping the question for my audience, for my clients, for my spouse, for my friends, how do I? And the I is them. So where you can find me is, Kaylin, I'm sure you're going to have in the show notes the proper spelling of my name. but everything is. My website is amylynn.com. And on my website, you can actually leave me a voicemail message. You can ramble for as long as you want if you just want to feel heard. My Instagram, Facebook, it's all Amy Lynn Carroll. Let's keep it simple. It's hard enough to spell, so we'll put it in the show notes, maybe with a link. Click it on it. What I encourage you to be, though, is honest and authentic. And if you don't know who that person is, find someone in your world that you can travel that journey with that can help you answer the questions that you have. Caitlin, it's been such an honor to be here with you and your audience today, talking about parenting and being parented and the option, the idea of control versus command.
I will share with the audience at the beginning, we were talking about, you know, typically I'll jump on with a guest and we'll kind of play around with some concepts. And I love Babs. Now I understand why, because you're like, yeah, we're not going to put labels on this. We're not going to control where this goes. And now I totally get it. That was so amazing. And thank you for being a open-hearted example of what can happen when we do allow and we take the command perspective. And when you were talking about being a travel partner with people, like, we get to choose and select who we allow to help on that journey. And that's why I do this, right? And the messages and the notes and the letters that we get from people who have connected to coaches and partners on through this podcast is absolutely why I do this every week. So please reach out to Babs, watch her TED Talks, you guys. It is insanely valuable. I have goosebumps just thinking about it. Thank you for being here. I appreciate it, Babs. And parents, thank you for showing up week after week, for letting us just spend a little bit of space with you. I enjoy and learn just as much from you guys and your feedback as I hope you gain from us and our guests. So we love you. Until the next perfect time, you guys, stay beautiful, stay inspired. See you next time.